So first I will show some examples of four-dimensional conformal theories. And of course, we can construct more examples in more dimensions or less dimensions, into especially. And then I will explain, this is a little bit pedagogical part, so I will explain how to calculate conformal anomaly and anomaly-induced effective action, which is a useful form of presenting quantum corrections in this case. Then I will discuss these quantum corrections to photon action, and almost will not speak about light massive fields and conformal quantum gravity, just a few words. And but instead, you can, in compensation, you can ask questions, interrupt me, no problem. And then I will tell about some applications, most important from my point of view. We can, in particular, I will show how to, we can classify vacuum states of black holes using anomaly-induced action and how to construct the Starobinsky model of inflation. Okay, all is relatively simple. And then I will do some conclusions. Okay. So let me start with four-dimensional conformal theories. In principle, this is an interesting example. We can take this sigma model type action with extra scalar field and curvature. Okay, so it's like a scalar field, but with arbitrary functions A, B, and C. And in principle, we can make easily a certain classification of this kind of action. And for this, we have to start with this expression introduced by O'Hanlon long ago. So in principle, you can see that here we have two fields, phi and r prime, g prime. But it looks like phi is not dynamical. But it's not true. Phi is dynamical because r has double derivatives. And as a matter of fact, this gives dynamics to capital phi. In order to see that this is not, in fact, different, so we might just make this conformal transformation of the metric and reparametrization of scalar field. And then we arrive to this expression. Okay, so A and B get this interesting dependence on this reparametrization and sigma. So it turns out here I put phi 1, for example, is derivative with respect to small phi. And it turns out that actually it was shown in our papers with Hiroyuki Takata, that the case of phi equal constant, okay, corresponds to these constraints, to these coefficients, to the coefficients. But phi equal constant is nothing else but general relativity with the cosmological constant. So we can see that general relativity with the cosmological constant is equivalent, okay, to this theory, okay, because we can make after that we can make one more reparametrization and write the canonical, the kinetic term in the canonical form. So this is a well-known conformal scalar, massless, of course, and with phi 4. So by the end of the day, we see that all theories of the sigma model type can be classified to two sets. One is equivalent to general relativity without scalar field, and another is, and they satisfy this constraint. Okay, one of them is conformal scalar, okay, and another set has no conformal symmetry. Okay, some questions?
Cosmological constant, there's not a dynamical, there's no additional dynamical.
Yeah, exactly. There is no degree of freedom scalar. But if you just split metric into two, into separate from the metric conformal factor, then you gain one more scalar field and one more conformal symmetry. Okay, conformal symmetry, it's the new degree of freedom. Okay, and in the general theory, in the general case, when these constraints are not satisfied, primary this, then you have an extra scalar and no symmetry. Okay? So this is the most simple, perhaps, example in some sense of scalar field. This is a little bit more general action. Here, xi is not equal to 1 over 6, so it is an arbitrary scalar field, massless. Then what happens is this action is still invariant under transformation, but this transformation must be global. So lambda is a constant. On the contrary, if xi equal 1 over 6, then we have local conformal symmetry. Local conformal symmetry. Okay. I will be mainly concerned with local conformal symmetry, but I will show you at some point the difference between the two. Now we can have another examples. First is a massless fermion, and second is a vector, abelian massless vector. I put some special signs that we have to pay attention to this case. Why? Because this is the only field in nature which really has local conformal symmetry. All other models, they are artificial, but electromagnetic field is a real conformal field at classical level until it starts to couple to some charges. Okay? I will show you by the end how we can see that this is also not true at quantum level. This conformal invariance breaks down at quantum level. But all other models are models, and this is the theory, this is the real thing which exists. Now, the transformation rules for this vector and spinner are like here, and we see that A does not transform, and it's strange because in principle, this rule, transformation rule, and the one for scalar, they follow the dimension, okay? They are exactly the same as dimension, and actually here it is not always not really different, because we have to remember the definition of vector field in curved space. Okay, it goes through the tetrad. So if you make a global conformal transformation, then A transforms, but for local it doesn't. For local it doesn't. Okay?
Transformations are the same for left and right?
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, because it is conformal transformation, it's not chiral. Okay? For chiral, you have to put gamma 5 in the exponential, then it will be different. Okay? Now one more example, very important for us, that's why I put all details, is the conformal gravity. It's wild gravity, okay, in four dimensions. It defines like that. You can generalize it to an arbitrary dimensional, say n, okay, but then the action, of course, will not be conformal invariant, but it will transform in a very simple way. So the generalization is like that. I hope everybody knows what is wild curvature, so I will not explain. Also very, very important for us is this example. It is force derivative scalar of the first kind. There is another example, okay, which I will not show you because it's not very important for us today. So here we see that the scalar field does not transform, okay? It's in four dimensions. And the operator is this one. It is four derivative self-adjoint conformal invariant operator, okay? It was introduced by a mathematician, Panaitis. He wrote a preprint. It was never, actually, it was published last year. People sent me the reference, but this guy died immediately. And yeah, it's a famous story. And it was informed to me by Branson, who was also a very good mathematician working on this field, and who also passed away soon. Then, actually, they told me this because I always refer to this operator as Regert, Fradkin, and Zeitlin operator, who introduced this in the papers, which I will discuss later on. Okay? So it's very important for us, this example. So please remember that delta 4 means some box square plus something operator. Okay? Now, I feel very good with this instrument. It's nice. So now we can have more examples. So one example is this. It was actually introduced by Fradkin and Zeitlin in the report about conformal supergravity, but there was a small mistake, and we discovered this because we did it independently, and then I started to look for the literature. Finally, we discovered that they had it, but a little bit different coefficient. But our is correct, okay? So this is the action with three derivatives, and the transformation rule is like that. In principle, one can construct conformal generalizations for many other fields, and like Rarita-Schlinger, for example, as far as I know, nobody constructed, but it is possible, perhaps, okay? And some people were busy with this. There were some papers by Erdmenger and Osborne, and from some point I lost attention, maybe some other papers were published in the meanwhile, and then there is a good review paper about classical conformal transformation by Faraoni, Gunzig, and Nardone. Okay, not perfect, I would say, but it's a pretty good report. Okay, now let us go to quantum theory. So, some questions about classical part? No, great. So here I will just sketch the things, and I would like to pay your attention to these two recent reviews. This was published as a proceeding of some conference, and this is a report paper ordered by EOP and published in Classical Quantum Gravity. So this has a full calculations concerning anomaly open. So if some students want to learn it, this is a good possibility, because this you can do perhaps in some reasonable time, maybe in several days. Okay, so because you can follow, I believe, okay, the calculations concerning anomaly. Now, so our purpose is to construct a semi-classical theory. The gravity I will not quantize in this talk. And usually we want to this theory to satisfy these principles. Okay, first I would like to start from a local classical action. Of course, at quantum level, effective action has plenty of non-localities. Okay, I will show you many of them today. And so that's why we don't know how to calculate effective action at quantum level, except some special models, like two-dimensional typically. Then we want theory to be renormalizable. It's perfectly possible if you work with semi-classical approach. It means that we do not quantize gravity. We quantize only matter, and gravity plays the role of classical background. Then you can have a normalizable theory, but for this end, you need to construct a right action. Now, we also can request the theory as simple as possible, but not simpler than that. Okay? And for this end, we, for example, forbid inverse mass parameters. Then we have very small choice, and the action which we will work with is like that. So we have Einstein-Hilbert term, okay, plus this term with higher derivatives. And this includes square of the wild tensor, Gauss-Bonnet invariant, R-square, and box R. So remember that Einstein-Hilbert term with cosmological constant has two parameters, Newton constant and cosmological constant. So all in all, we have six-parameter classical action of vacuum. Okay. Also, we need non-minimal interaction with scalars. Okay, but I will not discuss it. Now, as far as we need, we are interested today in the conformal theory. So for us, we can reduce the problem. The part of the action which is renormalized at one loop, okay, is this one. So we don't need R-square term, and we don't need Einstein-Hilbert term. It doesn't mean that these terms cannot be added. You can introduce them, okay? But they will not be renormalized, so they are not interesting for us, okay? They are not interesting. Remember that gravity is external field, so this action doesn't play active role, okay? So, well, this is vacuum action for today. I will show you that at one loop, it's perfectly sufficient, but even for quantum gravity in principle, conformal quantum gravity, but not at two loop. At two loop, you meet problems if you have interacting theory. Well, so let me show how to calculate conformal anomaly in principle. So we know that the notary identity corresponding to the local conformal symmetry has this form, okay? Here, K phi is the conformal weight of the fields, and so this is the equation. For scalars, it's plus 1, for fermions, 3 over 2, and for vector 0. And if we just take vacuum part, then this equation, this part of equation gives 0, and then we arrive at the zero energy momentum tensor for the vacuum. Actually, it's a kind of abuse of the language, because it's not energy momentum. It's a trace of the equation of motion for the vacuum, okay? But people use this from 60s, 70s, so I will follow. Now, at quantum level, we have to replace classical action by effective action, which is typically non-local, okay? And this, I will show you that this relation is violated. Now, conformal anomaly can be calculated in many, many ways. There were very good calculations, most serious perhaps, were done by Christensen in 76, 78, and he used point splitting method. It's good because it's very, very explicit. But technically, the most economic approach is was introduced by Duff in 77. I will show you with some additional tricks, which make things even simpler, okay? Such that I can teach you everything in 15 minutes. So this is the theory we want to work with. It has this number of scalars, fermions, and vectors, everything massless, everything conformal. Okay, and we are interested in one loop effects. Then the divergences are like that. We use dimensional regularization. So I put here only pole term. So I take four-dimensional integration, but you can perfectly put n-dimensional with factor of mu with n minus 4. And so here, those are equations for expressions for beta functions, okay, well defined in the case. And finally, we have to add the contra term because gamma has divergent part. So what happens is that a normalized effective action has classical part, gamma with bar, which has divergent part. This is and final part plus contra term. Now, if we just make a naive transformation, conformal transformation in the path integral, and we believe to the path integral here, okay, then we will see that the only source of non-invariance, conformal non-invariance, is delta S. Why? Because delta S must be local, and it must be n-dimensional, okay? Local and n-dimensional. So it means that we need to just to take care about the conformal transformation of delta S, and we are there, okay? This scheme of calculation is a little bit artificial, but you can also make it direct, or using the method of Christensen, or as we did recently in papers about heat kernel solution for massive fields, but you can easily see the massless part. And also there were papers by Wilkowski, Barwinski-Wilkowski. So explicit approaches give exactly the same result. So it's very simple. If we believe to this story about contra term, which is the right story, actually, in dimensional regularization, then we have this relation. And this is nothing else but application of this operator to gamma renormalize it. We put here, remember that only contra term gives a violation of conformal symmetry. And here we are. OK? Now, how to calculate this derivative? The most simple way is like that. We write G mini as G mini bar. This is fiducial metric with fixed determinant and exponential to sigma. Gerard Hoft recently wrote a paper about this transformation and explained it very well. Okay, some difficulties which arise here, I will not discuss it. If somebody wants, I can comment. Okay, and also then we can use this relation. Okay. This relation is very simple to derive because we know that G bar has fixed determinant. And this is nothing else but derivative with determinant. So part of G bar goes away. And by the end of the day, we have this relation, which is extremely useful, extremely useful. So let us see how it works. You have this contra term, like with Weyl square. You take it in n dimension. Then you know, if we make conformal transformation, that C square gives you exponential of minus 4 sigma. And square root of minus g gives you exponential of n sigma. Altogether, it gives you this exponential with n minus 4. Then when you take derivative with respect to sigma, you have n minus 4. This n minus 4 cancels with n minus 4 in the divergences. OK, because you have contra term, which is local and divergent. N minus 4 divided by n minus 4 gives you finite. And so here you are. This is the contra term. This is the anomaly. This is the anomaly. And now, in other terms, this is the simplest case. You have many derivatives of sigma, but since you put sigma to zero by the end, they're irrelevant. So if you make this scheme, then you have this C square of 4 in the anomaly. And for global conformal transformation, you immediately get this expression with coefficients like beta functions. However, things are not as simple as it looks, because if you are dealing with a local conformal symmetry, then even the first derivative of this contra term just gives you zero, okay? Because it's a surface term. So what it means? It means that here we have situation when global conformal symmetry gives you this expression for anomaly with well-defined coefficients, and local conformal symmetry gives you some indefinite situation, okay? It was discussed for many years, like in this very good report by Duff, who actually invented anomaly in 73. He said that this is somehow bothers him, this trouble with these coefficients. And we solved it a few years after, in 2003. We, in the paper with Manuel Sarey and Eduard Gorber. I will show you the solution at some point. So, yeah, anyway, let us, before we discuss this ambiguity of anomaly, let us solve this equation. What is the equation? We know that there is, after renormalization, some effective action. And this effective action satisfies this equation because its trace gives you anomaly. Conformal trace gives you anomaly. So we can just use it, okay, and solve with respect to effective action. It's exactly identical to what Polyakov did in two dimensions in order to get Polyakov effective action. And this solution has been performed by Rigert, Fradkin, and Zeitlin in 84. Okay, it can be generalized to some other cases like with torsion, with scalars, with vectors, and so on. And this is Buchbinder, Odintsov, and myself paper. Actually, if somebody knows our book about quantum gravity, there is a 92. There is full account of this. Okay, so you don't need to look into papers. But yeah, I will show you how it works. A little bit different than it was done in the original papers. So first, you can use the same parametrization of the metric. Then solution is absolutely simple. And it was done actually by Rigert and Fradkin-Zeitlin, and you have this solution. It's a very nice solution because first it is simple. It is exact if this integration constant doesn't matter. This integration constant is important because this is conformal invariant functional. So we can just go back, replace it here, and we have zero. So this is an integration constant of this equation. It's an arbitrary conformal invariant function. Okay, as usual, you cannot calculate full effective action. You can only calculate part of it. But if we are interested in the, let's say, Friedman-Robertson-Orker metric, okay, then this function is nothing else but number, absolutely relevant. So this is an exact quantum correction for the cosmological case. It's non-trivial because in four dimensions, as far as I know, it is the only exact solution. Okay, maybe not only in gravity, Okay, this is the exact effective action on the cosmological background, okay? And it still leaves the conformal factor arbitrary. So it's not bad. On the other hand, this form of the action is not perfect because it is expressed in terms of g bar and sigma, which are not covariant quantities. So actually, as Hoft discussed it some days ago, it is a disadvantage. It's a disadvantage. But we can immediately resolve it if we make another... if you look, get another form of the solution, equivalent solution, but in another form. How we do it? For this, we need to these transformation laws, okay? And here we have the situation like that. This expression transforms in a very special way, okay, to G bar, and it gives you four operators and acting on sigma. Now we introduce for this operator, conformal operator delta four, we introduce a Green function, and notice that there is this nice expression, okay? Nice equation, and I will use this notation. So integral d4x square root is nothing else but integral x, okay? Now let us just take this expression as a test and apply to it our derivative with respect to sigma. We see this is invariant, this is invariant, this is not invariant, but we know how it transforms. It transforms to delta 4, okay? And after integrating by parts, we get this. Now, everything is conformal invariant, and so we arrive to this expression. So what is the result? The term which corresponds to Weyl term in the anomaly is nothing else but this. By analogy, okay, we can immediately get the term which corresponds to this guy. Okay, because here you have twice sigma, and after taking sigma to zero, we have it. So it's very simple, and we see that these terms are non-local because they have Green functions, but they are covariant. Okay, so we have also this remaining box R. You can easily get from this local term, and finally we have this. I would call it best form of, in some sense, best form of effective action induced by anomaly. Again, it has integration constant, but also it has a local term and two non-local pieces. One with C square G and Gauss-Bonnet minus two-third box. And again, Gauss-Bonnet minus two-third box, G and E. It's interesting that this expression has two Green functions, and they are independent in some sense, okay? They are Green functions of the same a differential operator. But if we want to define this section completely, we have to define these green functions, I mean boundary conditions and so on, independently. Okay? And this helps us to write this expression correctly in a local form using auxiliary fields. What we do? We write it in a symmetric form. Okay, just for this end, we need just to add C square, G C square, so it becomes symmetric. Now, as far as it becomes symmetric, we introduce some new quantity, okay, here. And then with two symmetric expressions, you can write immediately the local and covariant form of the effective action induced by anomaly. What we observe is that here we have two extra fields, phi and psi. Okay? These two extra fields, not one, just two extra fields, they absorb the uncertainty coming from the Green functions. In other words, you can perfectly work with this action, okay? But you can also work with this. In this case, you have to define boundary conditions for Green functions. And in this case, you have to define boundary and initial conditions, let's say, for two auxiliary fields, two auxiliary scalars, okay? One can think, again, that this second scalar is a nonsense. Why? Because it is conformally invariant. This guy is conformally invariant, and this is conformally invariant. So why don't we put it inside the conformal functional? The response is, it would be wrong. Why? Let's think again. Because when you introduce this term, you modify essentially the four-point function of the theory. Okay? C square has two, in one flat background, has two metric perturbations. Okay? So with this, you make essential modification of the four-point function. So if we just throw this term away, it means that we made a real modification of the theory. This is not good. So we better keep this term. Okay? We better keep this term. And this proves useful also for applications. So we did this introduction of two scalars in 94 in the paper with my PhD student, Askar Jaksinayev. Then some years after, it was equivalent form was introduced by Mazur and Matola. And let me again explain why two scalars are important, okay? First, because actually, Emil Matola, when he gives talks, he also spent five minutes at least about it. So first of all, we needed to define Green functions, as I said. Okay, and and this I already said. Now one more reason. We will see in a few minutes that with these two scalars, we can classify vacuum states of the black holes, and this is not possible to do with just one scalar, okay? These were papers done mainly by Roberto Balbinot, Sandro Fabri, and a little bit by myself, and I didn't put here, it was published. One is Physical Review Letters, another in Nuclear Physics, 99. Also, there is a very good application, which we called modified Strabinsky model. Okay, again, this I will tell in some details. Now, and the last observation I added is that this form of anomaly-induced action, effective action, is not unique. You can get many others just changing conformal variant functional. And this was discussed at some point by Deser and Schwimmer. Okay, actually, they made the question how it can be that two very different actions can give the same result. And after 7 years, Stanley Deser found the response, and he published this response in 2000. And my impression is that Schwimmer is still not very happy with this answer. Okay. But it's my impression. Okay. So let me go to this the second part. I will show you how to solve the problem of ambiguity. Okay, and the ambiguity is occurs because the term which corresponds to this term to in the anomaly, it is local. It is non-local term. Okay, and local terms we know from Chern-Simons and from known studies in gauge theories. These local terms are always ambiguous. The peculiarity of the present case is that R square is local. However, R square does not exist in the initial action of the theory. Okay, it's different from Chern-Simons case. So R square is local, yes, but it's new term. If you like, if you have like quantum gravity, conformal quantum gravity, put R square from the beginning, you change the degrees of freedom of the theory. And I will show you another example without quantum gravity. Okay. So this is the old story, okay? So we can solve ambiguity if we put R squared term. Now, how it works? In dimensional regularization, let us repeat the considerations of DAF, original considerations, let's say, okay, which gave beginning of the story. So we know that box arc term does not contribute to anomalous violation. What DAF did at the beginning? He just put here, we can put here a counter term like C square, but we can put C square not in four dimensions, okay? We can put it in any dimension D, okay? And D can be four, but D can be different also, okay? And DAF just put D equal four, and he got this result. And curiously, this minus 2/3 over box R gave exactly the same coefficient as the beta functions for scalars and spinors, and different for vectors. If you take Biro and Davis, they say, look, for vectors, perhaps it's just a strange occurrence, which happens. Yeah, things like that. But the situation is not so simple. Why? Because nobody dictates us to put D equal 4, okay? So we can put perfectly D equal N plus gamma N minus 4. The contour terms are still local, and everything works perfect. You remove your divergence, you renormalize the theory. But in this case, the R square term, which you get in the effective fraction, and the box R in the anomaly will be exactly proportional to gamma, okay? So what we see? We see that, in fact, there is a real ambiguity, okay? Dimensional regularization does not give different predictions for scalars and or vectors, okay? It gives you arbitrary coefficient in all cases. If you really use all possibilities which you have initially from the in the theory, okay? So how we can, in dimensional regularization, fix this ambiguity? The procedure should be include R square term. As far as gravity is not quantized, it's not a problem, as I said before, okay? So we have to introduce this term into classical correction, calculate quantum correction, and then make a finite renormalization of this term, okay, according to observations. This is very good for Stravinsky model, original Stravinsky model, because it requires big R square, okay, like with 10 billion coefficient, numerical coefficient, and you can do it perfectly here, okay? You can also do modified Stravinsky model, which I will show you a little bit later. The question is, if we add R square, okay, and for example, request that gamma is zero, okay, then you meet the rest, and the rest is the real quantum correction. Is it ambiguous or not? Or in other words, this is an ambiguity, is an artificial occurrence of dimensional regularization, or it is a real ambiguity? In order, it's a very tough question, and in order to answer it, we need another example of ambiguity in very different regularization, and we can do it. Okay, let us take these calculations for massive fields, which we did with Eduard Gerber, and the result is like that. And don't be scared, because here is only part of the result, okay? So this is the form factor. I took only one of them, which is R and R, okay? We could calculate full form factors in these papers. And we have here the form factor which depends on small a. Small a is like that. It is non-local, already non-local expression. And with this, we construct a capital A, which has a logarithmic part. So we get this huge expression. If psi equal to 1 over 6, okay, and mass equal to 0, okay, in this limit, we just get a local term, R square, okay? And we always get it with the right coefficient, okay? Exactly the same as people had with Christensen and Christine Dokier with Z regularization and so on. Of course, Z regularization is not convincing because it deals with global transformation, not with a local one, okay? But the Christensen calculations are very good that we fit with them. So is it true that the ambiguity does not exist? No. Let us make one more step and consider so-called higher derivative Pauli-Wilhelms regularization. So we have initially massless dimensional, massless and conformal scalar field, and we add some number n of regulator fields, okay? And then we have this section, integrate all these regulator fields, and the result depends on the number of these fields and on the masses and psi. What happens is that we can choose in a special way, I will not put here details, this is the reference to the paper. We can choose the fields, some fields, those fields are, how to say, artificial, they can have wrong statistics, wrong Grassmann parity. So we can choose them in such a way that we cancel all divergences. And the question is, the result, final result is unique or not? And it is not. it is not. By the end of the day, we can see that there is a certain ambiguity, not as big as in dimensional equalization, but still it exists. So what we can conclude with this technical part is that anomaly is defined in principle up to this coefficient in front of box R. But on the other hand, you can always fix it with R square, renormalizing R square. So in what follows, I will just forget about this ambiguity and think that we can introduce R square and fix the ambiguity. How I can think about this operation? We can think of the following way, that we can introduce R square with a very small coefficient. And then this, there will be hierarchy. The conformal degrees of freedom will be always suppressed. And this holds in quantum correction. This is nice. Okay. Now, even stronger arbitrariness, you cannot think that this is something small. If you have interacting scalar field, then we find that this is an ambiguity, okay? And this ambiguity concerns this term. This is more, even more serious, because it means that the theory is, broken in its heart, because this changed the number of active degrees of freedom of the theory, okay? So you start with the conformal theory, and you go, and at one loop, you see that this conformal counterterm is not defined. Okay? The divergence is conformal. But one loop, you have a non-defined conformal term. So this is not good for the theory. It means the theory is not well-defined in the sense quantum corrections cannot be calculated. The same situation exactly is in wild quantum gravity. So now let us go to applications. So first I will show how to classify vacuum states of the black hole. So we know from Christensen and Fulling 77 that an anomaly in principle is responsible for Hawking radiation. And and we did it, as I said before, with Balbinot and Fabry. And then recently there was very nice generalization for Reissner-Nordström case. There are very big amount of papers about different studies of T-mini, okay? And people use different methods. So it's nice if we can fit with the results of these studies with auxiliary fields. How it works? We know that there are three vacuum states. One is the Boulevard states. Boulevard states is designed to reproduce Minkowski vacuum in space infinity. Okay? And as a horizon, it behaves badly. It's divergent. But at infinity, it goes like R minus 6, I mean the average of the T-mini coefficient. Unruh vacuum is different. It is designed to be regular on the future event horizon. And it doesn't behave asymptotically in infinity, okay? But it is useful to find the radiation at Hawking temperature. Finally, Hartley-Hawking vacuum is a thermal vacuum which describes a thermal equilibrium with the external radiation. Now, we know that three vacuum states, they are not, they reflect actually the real positions of the observers. Okay, in Boulevard case, observer is far from the black hole. In the Unruh case, is close to horizon and so on. So in classical theory, we know that we can go from one observer to another by changing coordinates. The question is whether we can do it or not in the quantum theory, okay? And I will show you that we can, okay? But for this, we need to use both auxiliary fields, okay? So how it goes? The procedure will be as follows. First, we have to solve equation for both phi and psi for two auxiliary fields. This solution will depend on some set of integration constants. Then we choose these constants to identify given vacuum state using some asymptotic conditions. And then we check whether it works for the rest of the space, okay? And of course, when we do it, we completely ignore the conformal functional. So we just trade the real energy momentum tensor, which we don't have, for this energy momentum tensor calculated from the anomaly induced action, okay? We believe, when we do so, we believe that this anomaly-induced action takes the main part of the quantum corrections. But of course, it's not true always, okay? So we will see that in two cases, it fits perfectly, and in third case, there is a certain discrepancy. So the general solution is given by this formula. Okay, and it depends on some set of constants, D, A, B, C. This is for phi. For psi, it is the same equation, so the same, because it's black hole background, the same equation. And so we have the same set of, another set of independent constants. So let us start with the Bulber vacuum. Then we just request that it goes to Minkowski in infinity. Then we immediately find that all these constants are zero. And calculating, we obtain this expression for the average of the energy momentum tensor. And it gives you, this is expression when we go to horizon, and this is expression in the infinity. What we see, we fit perfectly with what people know about Bulber state, because all those formulas like this kind of asymptotic behavior and this kind of singularity and this kind of asymptotic behavior are exactly what people obtain with other methods. Okay? Now, for the Unruh state, the same. We just take asymptotic conditions defined here. We need both phi and psi. Define them correctly, and we have here. Okay? We're here. Now, this last expression can be identified, for example, with this formula, similar formula calculated by David. If we identify alpha square minus beta square with luminosity. Alpha square and beta square, some combination of parameters. And now, finally, for a Hartley-Hawking case, we don't have good results. Why? Because we cannot do it just with this formula for anomaly-induced action. We need to fine-tune, make an extra tuning of L1. L1 is parameter corresponding to psi, second auxiliary scalar. I discussed with some people and finally I understood that it's somehow natural because Hartley-Hawking vacuum is thermal. Okay, so one has to take into account thermal effects, and this never was never done. Okay, it would be interesting to try to implement temperature into all this scheme. Okay, it's an interesting problem. What I also want to say is that if somebody wants to calculate, because Matola and other guys, Vaulin, they did it for Reisner and Nordstrom, but if you have some other background, black hole-like background, so you can use this scheme easily to have all this, calculate Hawking radiation, and even classify vacuum states. Okay, because this is perhaps most natural scheme. You don't need to know much about vacuum states. You just need to know your how to put take into account the asymptotic conditions for the auxiliary fields. So it's good work perhaps for student or somebody interested to learn this business. Now, let me show you another example. This is the Strabinsky model, okay? We start with this section, which has, I will a little bit generalize it by introducing cosmological constant. So we have Einstein-Hilbert term with cosmological constant, matter, which is supposed to be in inflationary epoch completely conformal, vacuum action, which is also conformal, and induced action, which I described it to you before. Conformal functional here has no importance at all, and so we are in a very clean situation. And we arrive at this equation. This equation looks horrible, eh? It's big, it is four derivative, but it's not that bad because 30 years ago, Strabinsky solved it exactly, okay? He solved it without cosmological constant, but we could solve also with cosmological constant. But moreover, despite Strabinsky solved it, but we are not like Strabinsky, so we don't need to solve it exactly. We need only particular solutions. And particular solution for k equals 0 are like that. It's exponential. For k equal plus minus 1, it's just sine and cosine, hyperbolic sine and cosine. So it's not really different. And we see that for cosmological constant, we have two solutions, OK? We have one with plus and one with minus of the square root. Lambda over Planck mass is supposed to be very small, OK? So actually, we have here, okay, I remember you that B is always negative. B is always negative for all particle content. B is coefficient, which depends on number of fields. B is always negative. So we have here two well-defined solutions. Now, if we assume that lambda is very small, we get two kind of splitting. So first solution, I put it infrared because it's supposed to be the nowadays universe plus matter, of course. Okay, so it's just classical solution which does not take into account quantum corrections. And second is exactly Strabinsky inflation. Second is exactly Strabinsky inflation. Let me tell you that in many, many places, people commit a mistake. They just say that Strabinsky inflation is based on R squared term. It's not true. Strabinsky inflation in original form is based on B different from zero, and B corresponds to Gauss-Bonnet term. It is essentially non-local term in the effective action. Okay, with R square you never get exponential solution. You can approach exponential solution. Okay, now. Yeah, sure, but when after you take anomaly into account, you have from Gauss-Bonnet some term. I can show you here, maybe better. Okay. Gauss-Bonnet by itself, of course, but yeah, well, I went too far. Okay, for example, this term modifies a lot equations of motion, okay? Because this is term which comes from Gauss-Bonnet in the anomaly. It is Gauss-Bonnet plus something, okay, multiplied by Green function and again Bonnet. So this is not a, this term contributes to the equations of motion, okay? If you go to previous form, maybe easiest way is to just to take this form. So you see here Gauss-Bonnet multiplies by sigma. Sigma is log of A, that's all. From this action, you can calculate these equations for cosmology in, say, in some minutes, okay? It's easy. So here we are, and yeah. So we have two solutions, and let us just spend a little bit of time and thinking about, just think about stability of this solution. So we just perturb sigma, okay? It's not right to perturb A, the result is wrong, okay? So we perturb sigma and look what happens. It turns out that this solution, exponential solution, is stable if C coefficient, coefficients of R square, is positive, and this means this relation for the particles, okay? C positive was condition indicated in original Stravinsky paper. And if we look to this story, we see that this is the condition of stability. So it means that number of fermions and scalars must be somehow bigger than certain amount of vector fields. What it means, it's very nice, because we know that behind this model, there is some particle model, like grand unification theory of standard model or supersymmetric standard model. So this gives you a field for, let's say, speculations. So let us see what is the speculation. For example, if we take a supersymmetric standard model, then we have the minimal supersymmetric standard model, then we have these numbers. And we see with these numbers, you perfectly have stable inflation. It's very good. So stable inflation, we checked it numerically, starts absolutely independent of the initial conditions. It heals any initial particle content, real particles, not virtual. So up to 100 Planck densities become zero in just some hundreds of Planck times. So it is very strong inflation. You have it, right. But why inflation ends? Because this will be exponential inflation with the Hubble parameter of Planck order. So for some reasons, I will show you why, the inflation have to slow down. If it slows down, at some point, the S particles will decouple, and we end up with a minimal standard model. And at the level of minimal standard model, we see that C change sign. So it means that transition between stable inflation and unstable inflation happens because S particles decouple. Now we know that for some mysterious reason, all S particles are very heavy. If somebody studied supersymmetry, I mean phenomenological supersymmetry, you know that for some reason there is so-called soft violation of supersymmetry in mass sector. And for some mysterious reason, all S particles are very heavy. We do not discuss this reason, but we can say that for this reason, inflation can start without any additional requirements for initial conditions and then end up in a natural way. Okay? And yeah, S particles are heavy, they decouple and so on. For this reason, we started to investigate decoupling and it works, okay? In decouplings, it works. I will show you later what doesn't work in this model. Okay? But before that, let me show you one more test. Let us test the present-day universe. In the present-day universe, the particle content is like that. We have one photon active. All other particles, including neutrino, decoupled, I don't know, billions of years ago, okay? So we have perfect test. If with this n equal 1, the another solution, lambda over 3, square root of lambda over 3, does not explode, it's good, okay? It must be stable. Because otherwise, we have this, what people call sometimes stability of Minkowski. But this is not Minkowski, it is the sitter, okay? Close to the nowadays universe. But it must be stable against quantum corrections. Let us see if it is true or not. So we take the nowadays Hubble parameter, and again perform a small variation. In the linear regime, we meet this equation for eigenvalues, okay? And curiously, all these eigenvalues have negative real parts. This is very good. It means that we are safe. I can finish my talk. The inflation will not start right now, okay? And it is so good only because H0 is positive. Why H0 is positive is because we have positive cosmological constant, okay? If we wouldn't have positive cosmological constant, we could not be protected against quantum corrections, okay? And my talk would be interrupted somehow. So, or we should go to the second order in perturbations in this case, okay? So this is not bad. The model passed one more test. In fact, this model passed more tests, but unfortunately it does not have predictive power. So I'll explain you now why. Because this is a, we took in the paper with Joan Sula and then a little bit generalized with Anna Pilinson and Takakura. We took masses of the fields into account in some tricky way, which I will not tell you because I have no time, perhaps. Okay, and what happens? This is log-log plot. So this is physical time, t, okay, and this is sigma, not a, sigma, okay? You will see that this inflation at the beginning behaves, the straight line means exponential, okay, because it's log. So, and then it slows down due to the masses. It slows down, f tilde is parameter which characterizes the effect of masses. And it's interesting that this plot was obtained numerically by Joan Sula originally, but then we found that it reproduced parabola with a precision of 10 minus 6. Okay, I don't know why, but it's real parabola. Okay, so what it means? It means that at the beginning, we can use this anomaly-induced action, and it works. It slows down, slows down, slows down, and then we come to this region. Okay, it comes to this region, and this is a very bad region for us. Why? Because here, we cannot use anomaly-induced action. In this part of the story, the Hubble parameter has the same order of magnitude as the mass of the quantum field. Okay? If you are familiar with the subject, you understand what it means. It means that we are upset, essentially upset, because for this regime, we have no approximation, no approach, and no method. Okay? We have no idea what to do here, okay? As far, and here in the last 65 EFOLs is all physics which we are interested in, okay? Maybe this model is perfect, yes, maybe. But we cannot try it, okay? Because we have no model, people are worrying about string theory and about other complicated things, but nobody tried seriously, including myself, because I don't know how to do it, to calculate quantum effects of a single massive particle, okay, in the situation on cosmological background, when the Hubble parameter is of the same order of magnitude as this mass of the particle, okay? This is the most challenging problem in the gravitational physics, I guess, okay? It's a real problem. It's a real problem because before you answer this question, you cannot go ahead with any complicated theories, in fact, okay? You will never know whether your theories have some relation to reality because this is an option, okay? And here we are. So we don't know how to do it. As a matter of fact, I spoke to too many people about this, and some people told me that it's not really difficult. And nobody, no one of them came back, including some famous people. Okay, so it's, I don't know, I did some attempts, but we really don't know how to calculate. Now, what we have from this model is that very good initial state of the inflation. We have some reason why it slows down, because our model, I believe, it's correct, okay, in this, and then we have Starobinsky model, which starts somewhere here, okay? Which we don't have transition from one to another, okay? Well, some more advantages of this modified Starobinsky model. A very good advantage is that it does not predict very strong production of gravitons. In other words, gravitational waves do not amplify too much. Actually, this is the result of the original Starobinsky paper of 83. But we just confirmed it, okay? After us, there was paper by Hawking, Hartley, and somebody. And no, Hawking, Hertek, and somebody, okay? They actually repeated the Starobinsky calculations and got exactly the same result as Starobinsky. Okay, our approach is a bit different, okay? But we had the same result. So gravitational waves are under control. It's non-trivial, again, because the equation for gravitational waves has four eigenvalues, and all of them are negative. One is zero, almost zero, and three are negative. Okay, so this is good model. This is good model, but it's asymptotically good model, okay, because we don't have access to the most interesting part of it. And finally, I will show you this all that I told you until now was like 5-6 years old. Now I will show you the last works of our company. We tried to calculate quantum corrections to the photon action, okay, and our focus of interest was breaking of conformal symmetry. There are some motivations. First of all, the equation of state of the modified photon would be also modified, so it can help us to make some good new cosmological models, including entropy production in the radiation-dominated epoch, and so on. Photon creation, the same thing, okay? Then I hope very much we can improve the understanding of creation of initial seeds of magnetic fields in the galaxies before the dynamo mechanism start to amplify them. And also, there is a big amount of papers about superluminal propagation of light, which can be, again, somehow affected by these quantum corrections. Now, what we do? In fact, this problem is good because it helps us to think about serious business. Why photon conformal invariance is violated? For two reasons. First, conformal anomaly, yes, but also photon couples to fermions, and fermions are all massive. So in an indirect way, photon couples to conformal factor of the metric. Okay? So in principle, there are two questions. What is the mechanism, because we have two, and whether the corrections are unique or not. Okay? And I will not answer the second question because of time restrictions. Okay, but I can refer you to the preprints or explain more if you want. So first of all, anomaly-induced action. One don't need to work much to calculate this part because F squared transforms exactly as C squared. So what we do, we take WC squared in the effective action induced by anomaly and everywhere replace it by this sum. We immediately obtain anomaly-induced effective action with photons. Okay, it's all. You don't need to do anything else. Okay, now about massive fields. About massive fields, the same story. We have to calculate this guy. We multiply this in order to take this H operator. We have to calculate log determinant H. And for this end, we have to multiply by the conjugate operator. And then we just use this relation. My collaborator, Guilherme Beredo Peixoto, at that time he was my student, he proved that this, the trace log of this expression does not depend on the sign of the mass. And so we can safely use this relation. Okay, perfect. So doing this, we arrive to this equation. I don't show you the intermediate calculations because they are not big, okay, basically. But not lengthy, in fact. So again, we have the form factor for is this normal electrodynamics. And here we have logarithmic divergence, exactly common divergence for QED, plus the form factor, which we can present in a standard form. In high energies, this form factor gives you logarithmic behavior, okay, as usual, as in minimal subtraction scheme. At low energies, it gives you Appelquist-Carassonne decoupling theorem. And in between, it gives you full expression, okay? All we need is here, okay? All we need is here. Now, what we can see is that this expression shows how the conformal invariance is violated because here are terms like, opa, I need some chalk. Here are terms like, in the first order, okay? You have terms like F mu, mini box over M square F mu. And this is, of course, not conformal invariant. So if the effect comes from the massive field, this term is responsible for violation of conformal invariance and not the anomaly-induced action, okay? So so we have two mechanisms, really, of violating conformal symmetry. They are not completely different because at high energies, as we show in the paper, in this preprint, okay? Okay, at high energies, this action enables one to calculate conformal anomaly also. So let me go to conclusions. So first of all, we saw that there is a kind of some number of conformal theories in four dimensions. Now we learned that in semi-classical theory, the local conformal symmetry is violated by anomaly. And moreover, there are local terms, okay, which are ambiguous. to some extent. Okay? And in some cases, it can lead to inconsistency. If we have interacting theory beyond one loop, all the series are not well defined. And also in quantum conformal quantum gravity, it's the same story. Theory breaks down basically starting from two loop approximation. Okay, because quantum correction cannot be defined in a reasonable way. And so what we can see at the same time, we saw that conformal anomaly is a good way to calculate effective action, and it's a very good approximation. So despite conformal symmetry cannot be exact and is always violated and so on, it's worthwhile to look at it as an approximate symmetry. Okay, then its violation gives you a nice way to calculate quantum corrections, to calculate effective action. Thank you.
So this quantum correction to a Fortian thing, it would vanish on the shell for a Fortian, and it would be the 0.5 correction of charges.
Well, those quantum corrections are standard one, okay, which people use in QED. Of course, they modify, yes. They modify the, not the equation for charges. In this case, it's a free photon, okay?
Part of the box of a free photon, so, in the flat space.
No, in flat space, if you take F mini equal to zero, cosine zero, okay? But if F mini is non zero, this is the essential part. It is polarization operator.
But okay. That's not for the proper loop. The box for the proper loop is zero.
Ah, okay, Ben. Well, yeah, yes, it's true. Yes. Because you mean that on shell you have to go on shell and then this difference disappears.
It doesn't modify the propagation of what modifies the interaction with shells.
Well, some people think differently. If you take this, yeah, of course. Here is Dolgov visiting sometimes. You can speak to him because he's author of the papers about superluminal propagation of photons, okay? Starting, and there are many, many people writing on that, okay? So, and the people basically, it's not my business, okay? I didn't do this. But those people say two things. First, that this effect can be due to the gravitational field, okay? Like Hrypalovich in the first paper. They said in the gravitational field, you can have propagation of superluminal, including propagator. And other people like Dolgov and others, they study up to two loop effect and so on, thermal effect and so on, just trying to get another dispersion.
If I'm less sophisticated than Hrypalovich and Dolgov, I hope you find the and I will just apply equations of motion and then the corrections to the G currents interacting and the more corrections to the right.
Well, but it's not in curved space, okay?
Okay.
So I'm not very happy with this supernominal part, okay? So, but it's not my paper, so I maybe you better discuss with others. But in principle, yeah, this is quantum correction. Then you do with it whatever you want. Okay, you can do whatever you want with this quantum correction. But in principle, yes. And the part which I did not tell you here is that. In principle, you can take another H, this is H1, right? But you can take another operator as conjugate and you have different result. This is so-called multiplicative anomaly and it is non-local. Now, on shell, it disappears in flat space, okay? But that doesn't mean it does not exist. It exists, okay? It exists. And then on shell also, you can have on shell in different ways, okay? It's quantum correction. You calculate your loop correction, you have some formula. And then what you do, go on shell in one or other manner, it's a question of your model or your application. Okay.
Any other questions? Let's thank you.